farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to ELC. Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're getting that whiplash from the weather like I am. Maybe you're going from freezing temperatures to warm temperatures and you don't know what to make of it. The good news is you got us in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. The patrons bring this show to you. Their support, their generosity means this show gets to continue, and boy, are we grateful. In exchange, those patrons get extra stuff, cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a bunch of bonus content. You got bonus whole podcasts for you to listen to get you through your week. Why not dig through the back catalog of Feeling This, where Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talk about the feelings behind video games? Why not jump into the audio version of the DLC Book Club, where Lana Bashinsky and I are talking about the Malazan Book of the Fallen, a 10-novel, massive, epic series. So much fun. Oh, and the Wednesday paid DLC program, where Lana joins us once again to get a little weird, to get a little goofy, to talk about the happenings, the goings-on, and the silliness that we get into every week. All of that, exclusive to patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games. In their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who's in a real red mood today, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Turning red. I am turning red. Man, we saw, now my A to C brain went to this. We saw real red pandas at the San Diego Zoo over, I guess it's President's Day weekend.
Yeah.
They are adorable. They're when we saw them, they were feisty. They were getting into stuff, mixing it up. Maybe that's what inspired my my red theme was IRL red pandas.
Did they ever turn into an adolescent girl?
But they were dancing like really, really well to their favorite teen heartthrob boy band. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's enough, I guess. That's fun. Glad to have you back, Christian. Missed you last week. Super excited. Getting back on the horse. We got so much to talk about this week. Some big games, some interesting news, and we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, well, I'm excited because DLC stands for Declaring That the Legends Convene. Because we have the host of Rivals Assemble, as well as creator and host of Guardians Radio. Mark Turcotte is joining us for the first time. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hey, Jeff and Christian, glad to be here. This is a great week to be here, being host of a Marvel Rivals show with Rivals Assemble.
Yeah.
Big update to Rivals. And of course, some news that we will be talking about a little bit later, I think, on the publisher side of the game. But I'm really glad to be here, man. And I feel you on the weather. I mean, I live here in the Carolinas, and we literally had snow just a couple days ago, and today I was wearing shorts. So it's just
same. Crazy. We drove up to the mountains this weekend. I'll talk a little bit about that later on the show. But took the family up to the mountains to go skiing. Left early on Thursday to try to beat this crazy storm. We did not beat that storm. It was I drove through the craziest weather I have ever driven through. It was a blizzard, whiteout conditions. They ended up closing the highway that we were on, closing the tunnel. And so we had to like improvise and just we stayed at this casino that it was us and other families that all had young kids and they did not want children there at all. It was a whole thing. And then today we're back and it's 65 degrees in my house. It's beautiful.
It's crazy. Weather's nuts, man. And that's what's funny here in Charlotte. Like all they have to do is literally just give the threat of snow. Everything shuts down.
Yeah.
Everything, like grocery stores, milk, bread, everything off the shelves. That's just the way it is here in the South.
Wild, wacky stuff. But let's talk games and let's get into it and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send us comments, questions, anything you'd like. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, it is because we got an email from a listener by the name of Joseph that Mark is here. Joseph said, you got to get Mark on the show. He's great. I loved him. I love him from Guardians Radio. Get him on the show. And so we reached out and made the connection with Mark. So lots of reasons for you to send us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Please don't hesitate. You can also join our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Another way to reach out, talk to the community, talk to us. Good folks hanging out in that Discord. But Mark, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, I think probably my story of the week has to be basically out of Hasbro, of all places. I don't know if you guys saw this story earlier in the week. They had an earnings call where the CEO of the company, Chris Cox, I think was his name, is basically going through the yearly earnings of last year and then, of course, what's coming up. And he teased that they have these digital ventures coming up, and these digital collaborations. And one of them, he said, is going to be with a company that put out one of the biggest games of last year, and that is Saber Interactive. They're teaming up with them to have them develop a AAA title of one of their tentpole IPs.
Yes.
So immediately it kind of got my mind racing. Like, what are the IPs that Hasbro is best known for? So you have, of course, Dungeons & Dragons, right?
Yeah.
We kind of had a pretty damn good Dungeons & Dragons game, right, with Baldur's Gate. So
and several on the horizon as well. There's several already announced that are being developed, not by Saber.
We have Magic the Gathering, which, you know, I mean, you have obviously Arenas out there, which is the straight card game. But wasn't there even like some sort of like an ARPG, Magic the Gathering game that was going to come out? It was going to be free to play for some reason.
That may be the case. I'm not entirely certain. But I know that they're taking big strides in making Magic a more sort of, pan media. They want TV shows, they want movies, they want comic books, they want Magic the Gathering to be a bigger deal than it is even now.
Right.
So it could be a possibility.
You have G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Right. Could maybe get a little G.I. Joe. Let's go, Joe.
We had a G.I. Joe video game starring Snake Eyes that was in development by Atomic Arcade, I believe.
Yeah.
Not sure what's become of that or if that's still happening.
But let's be honest. The titles we've not seen in a while, it's got to be the Transformers, right? I mean, those Cybertron games from High Moon, if you go back now and watch some gameplay footage, or if you're lucky enough to still own a copy of those games were action-packed. I mean, the word bombastic just comes to my mind whenever I think of those games. My son recently, we were watching a video of it probably about a month ago because my nephew loves Transformers. And so I said, why don't you pull up a video of I think it was Fall of Cybertron. We put it on. And just the first like 30 minutes of that game, you're playing as Bumblebee, you know, you're running through, there's explosions going off all over. And just the idea of what Saber Interactive could do, just think of how good Space Marine 2 looks. I mean, it literally looked like you're, I don't want to say an action figure running around, but I mean, it visually looked incredible. So if you can take that engine and put the Transformers in that and just, for me, just put them on Cybertron and just give us that game.
Yeah.
I think it would be a hit. It'd be a no-brainer for them to do that.
That does sound cool. You know, we just got that news of the cancellation of a Transformers game, that Transformers Reactivate. that Splash Damage was working on. In fact, they leaked some early test footage of that game. It looked pretty rad. It was like a first person, third person. You could transform at any time. It looked awesome. They canceled that. So I don't, I mean, your money is on a Transformers game here, or is that just what you're hoping for?
Well, it's definitely what I'm hoping for, but that's what my money's on, I think. Because just recently, was it last year, I think, in July, they relisted all those Cybertron games on Xbox, and even, I think, Transformers Devastation, and they had been delisted for years.
Yeah.
So they put them back on there. You can't buy them now, but they are visible on the store. So I think there's going to be a push from Hasbro to get a game out there, and just seeing the success that Space Marine 2 had, I think it would be a no-brainer.
That sounds pretty cool. You know, Hasbro also has Power Rangers. Don't overlook that. Could be a Power Rangers.
What did we just get? Rita's Revenge, right? I mean, that was kind of our like a Shredder's Revenge or Rita's Rewind, right? I think that was called.
Yeah.
Kind of your classic, you know, side-scrolling brawler game, which is awesome in its own right. But I mean, I don't know. I think Transformers would definitely be the perfect fit. What do you think, Christian?
I mean, I think that what was it? Phrasing of saying they're excited to use the swarm tech, which is what made Space Marine 2's all of those not xenomorphs, you know, rushing at you. So that got me thinking, like, what's the Hasbro IP with
My Little Pony?
Yes.
With mobs. I was gonna say with mobs. Yeah. And yes, G.I. Joe, you could have mobs, but not traditionally. Like, I don't see a lot of like pew, 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 like just taking out mobs of Cobra. I think that also points me toward Transformers, because especially on Cybertron or somewhere where you could have just scores of enemies that you're kind of mowing through. And I think that kind of does narrow it down a little bit. But then again, maybe it is G.I. Joe, some, you know, mechanical enemy or you know, we're seeing it in comics. We're also seeing it in film. Is this is everybody right? Is this the Hasbro universe? Is it Transformers versus Joe?
There you go.
Joe versus Transformers.
It's all of it.
Yeah.
It's the Planeswalkers. Isn't that the whole thing with Magic the Gathering now? How they're pulling in Fallout and Spider-Man and all these different, universes. It's the Planeswalkers. So they're coming in from different planes. And
you're giving me an opportunity. You're giving me an opportunity to mention another awesome news story that happened this week, that Magic the Gathering is going to have an Avatar the Last Airbender set coming at the end of 2025, which I am so so excited about. My son has just gotten into Magic the Gathering. I was talking about that a couple of weeks ago, and
nice
the fact that we love Avatar the Last Airbender, watched it as a family all the way through. And they're gonna do, I don't know if they're doing just Secret Lair like a few cards, or if it's a full set, like the Final Fantasy set that's coming in June. But
you need to buy them for your son, though. I mean,
he will love the fact that I will keep it encased in mint condition behind
my oldest
plastic.
Just recently really got into 9/11s. Like, she's really into 9/11s, and I just like, I really want to buy her one just because she's super into them now.
Weird things that Hasbro owns that might, you know, I don't know if count as a tentpole IP, but they also have Nerf and laser tag as IP.
Well, you know, then it's either Nerf or nothing.
There you go. Wow. Wow. That's it. We're done. Wrap it up right there. That was perfect. Christian got it. You win.
I'm very curious as what this is. I feel like Transformers makes a lot of sense, as Mark is mentioning. And I think that could be really cool. I mean, Saber's got a pretty full plate right now. Saber is working on Turok Origins. They're working on Jurassic Park Survival. They picked up the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake that Aspyr was going to do. I don't know if that's still happening or not.
I was just going to say, is that even still happening?
May not be.
Yeah.
And it's all synergy, guys. All the topics coming together. They also announced that AAA RPG based on Avatar the Last Airbender.
There you go. Yep.
So it all makes sense.
So you're saying we're going to get this game in 2032 when this Hasbro one comes out.
A ways off. But
well, I mean, that's the sad part about it, is like, he's announcing this now. And again, we don't know exactly what it is, but it's like, how long is it going to be until we see this? So,
right. Yeah. But yeah, the swarm tech was pretty cool in Space Marine 2. you know, fighting, you know, dozens and dozens of creepos. So who knows? We'll see what they do with it. It's a pretty exciting. I think it's a pretty. I wonder how much they're like. Yeah, the CEO opened his big yapper, and now we're gonna have to listen to this question for 2 years. You know, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
I'm going to pull a Jeff, and I'm going to take multiple stories but thematically link them. I want to do a little, you know, multimedia, video game multimedia update. You know, this just in. People continue to mine video games for movies and TV shows. It's the, you know, we are living through the MCU of video games now, right? They're making good adaptations of video games. They're making great adaptations of video games. We've been in it for a few years now. This is the renaissance of it. We got a lot of news about new updates of those. And we can kind of hit on a few of them quickly and then maybe talk about I want to talk about the Street Fighter one the most, but we got a release date for The Last of Us Season 2 on HBO. It is coming soon, Sunday, April 13th, which I think is earlier in the month than what people were originally speculating when that first started to come out. Then Sifu, the fighting game, challenging, you die, you come back, you age as you go, kind of Batman-esque combat. It had a secret level on Amazon Prime Video's show, Secret Level. There was a Sifu-inspired episode. And now we're getting more talks about the Sifu feature film, which has gone through a little bit of development. I don't know if it's trouble, but transitions over the years. Originally, it was announced before to do with one thing, and now it's on another. And now Deadline is reporting that Netflix has joined the project. And T.S. Nolan is going to be writing the script. And what I think is interesting about that is that he wrote the Maze Runner films from a while ago, and then also the Adam Project more recently for Netflix, which is why I feel like they felt confident perhaps giving him the keys for Sifu, because Adam Project was tentpole Netflix-style film, right? Like big Hollywood stars, sci-fi, like SFX-heavy movie that was in their top 10 for a long time. But also Sifu is continuing this version of the adaptation, is working with how do you say Chad's last name, Stileski? Yes. The John Wick director. And so that seems like it has the ingredients for making a really good
yes
Sifu movie. And I love the game. We've talked about it a lot on the show, but Jeff, does this get you? Do you think this is in good hands for what Sifu on film can be?
I don't know what Sifu on film. I know what seafood on film is. Oh, it's delicious. No,
it's
I don't
a dinner
know
with Andre.
my sushi dinner with Andre. I don't know what Sifu on film is. I like how you know. you summarized that game as being, you know, live, age, move, you know, repeat.
Live, die, repeat.
That is an interesting movie take, but I don't think it's essential to – I feel like, you know, we're in this weird era where everything has to have already been an IP for it to be made into anything else. And video games is the new – is the new coal mine for mining those things. And we're just, hey, was it a thing? Has it already been a thing? How many copies did it sell? Okay, we can make a movie out of it. It seems to me, knowing none of these creators and having no inside information, that this feels like a blank slate upon which you can lay an awesome martial arts action film.
Because it is, right? without the live, die, repeat age mechanic, it's an awesome martial arts revenge story, which has never been told before.
Right, yeah.
Right? And it gets green-lighted because it exists as an IP already, right? It's sort of like, oh, it just gives us we can't just make cool martial arts original IP movie. We got to base it on something. But maybe I'm cynical. I don't know. Mark, what do you think?
Well, I mean, how many more eyeballs do you think get on it just because of the name Sifu? Like, that's what, you know, you said, like, what if it was just the, you know, noir revenge kung fu movie. Like, what if it was just that, but
Fifu.
By putting Sifu, yeah. But like by putting the name on it, does that actually level, you know, get them a little bit more eyeballs?
I don't think so, but the people that write the checks think so, right? The people right. that write the checks think it's a safer bet to make something that's based on something that already exists than it is to make something based on nothing. And that's just the where Hollywood is right now. And
yeah.
I don't know if it's actually true. I think you bring up an excellent point. It may not actually be true that you know, brings additional attention to a thing, but that's just the way things tend to be right now. And, yeah. You know, I don't know. I have high hopes. I like, you know, hey, I like martial arts action movies. And these creators seem like they know how to make those. So I just don't feel, even as someone who enjoyed that video game, I'm not like, ooh, I can't wait to see that story on the big screen. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's some things that make sense, like The Last of Us.
Sure.
You know, the HBO Max series. That was a game my wife was never going to play, never going to watch me play. But it was a story that I was like, hey, we've watched Walking Dead and things like that together. I'm like, this is a story you would actually really enjoy. So it was actually a lot of fun to sit down with her and watch that first season and know some of those story beats that were coming up, and seeing her response to it was great.
That's awesome.
So I'm really looking forward to season two. But it's like, I've played Sifu. I'm not going to say, hey, this video game that is, you know, has this cool mechanic. No, you know, that's not going to be a selling point for her at all. So I don't know. You know, some things fit the mold, like A Last of Us, and some a Sifu could be cool, but it's not. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the success rate
is. It has the potential to be. I feel like some of these video games that are being turned into films that are smaller video games that maybe, you know, they give a little more leeway to the creators to invent things, right? Because the video game is less specific about it. I mean, Last of Us is, you know, it's a story-driven video game. I would not describe Sifu as that, even though the story in Sifu was fine. I'm not trying to, you know, knock that. I'm just saying that's not what I went to that game for. I went to that game because I got to do sweet martial arts moves. And that's what I'll go to that movie for, too.
Yeah.
And that's how I think the movie, the IP, does bring in more eyeballs. Anyone that would be interested in seeing Fifu, the new IP, awesome martial arts action revenge story, is going to also still see Sifu. But now folks that like the video game and shows like ours are going to talk about it. And as long as it lives up to some unknown potential, it expands the possible audience base in that way that I think is interesting. Also, you know, Netflix just kind of needs it to be content that they've put on people and we'll watch it. You know, if it is Netflix and it's not theatrical, I think that also changes the equation some. But the next one, the last one of this, like video games become TV shows or movies that I find fascinating. And Mark, I want your take on this first. We got a new writer, director, or I guess the director for the live action Street Fighter movie. And they were the writer, director, and executive producer on the Eric Andre show. Katao Sakari, I'm terrible with names, I apologize. If you watched the Eric Andre show, I mean, just a brilliant piece of absurdist a take on the late night talk show. I mean, just sometimes he would just run on stage and break the desk and nothing would, and it was just anything that could happen.
Dragon
would
punch?
break the desk via dragon punch.
There you go.
And I'm so curious about this hire and what this maybe means for a Street Fighter movie that, quote, Capcom is deeply involved with this adaptation. Does this make you more excited for it? Is it going to be a comedy? Like, where is Street Fighter going?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to kind of be honest here. I was always more of a Mortal Kombat guy than the Street Fighter guy, I think, going back. You know, I remember as a kid going to see the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie in theaters, you know, and being very disappointed, but then scouring through the magazines for the Mortal Kombat movie coming out. But, you know, if you're putting somebody...
Mortal Kombat definitely won that matchup back in the
90s. Oh clearly. Come on, man.
No argument there. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, when you're putting somebody who maybe has a little bit more talent on this. So I'm not familiar with the Eric Andre show. So this is more of a comedy show, Christian?
Oh, he's a 100% absurdist comedy.
Okay.
Just, I mean, sometimes he's naked. sometimes he interviews a guest. Sometimes it never happens because things spiral out of control. I mean, it's just.
Yeah. Well, I did pick up Street Fighter VI and really, really enjoy the game. Being able to, you know, the mode. What was the mode where you're kind of walking around the town? And yeah. You're getting, you know, the campaign mode, I guess, if you want to say. That wasn't the classic Street Fighter mode. I loved that. And there were little funny bits in there, you know, where you're fighting just crazy people that were kind of coming out of nowhere, coming out of the woodwork. And so if they're able to translate some of that humor into it, I think that could possibly be successful, you know, rather than try to take the serious route, which, I mean, you go back and watch that Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. I mean, it's just laughable now, but at the time they were trying to be serious with it, where I think if they go in kind of with that tongue-in-cheek side of it, I think that potentially could be successful and really help just with the game or with the movie you know, being more of a success compared to that older film. So
poor Raul Julia, his last role as M. Bison.
He was great in that movie. That movie is cheesy garbage, but he owned owned his role and his
career. I haven't seen it in years, man.
This is a great contrast for me to what we were just talking about with Sifu, where Sifu is, for all intents and purposes, a blank slate upon which you can make a cool action movie. Street Fighter comes with baggage, right? Because everybody is aware of what Street Fighter is. And I think that is a movie where people are going to be coming to it because it's called Street Fighter. Whereas I
Chun Li's thighs. That is why people are going to that movie.
I think it's a real hard. That's a real hard property to adapt, I think, because it is so goofy, but also takes itself seriously. And I think the audience wants it to be a serious, awesome action thing. So maybe the solution really is to go in a comedic direction. You know, that said, just because this guy has done comedy, you know, we don't have to bring up the numerous comedic people that have transitioned into making, you know,
We could peel off a few. Right.
Oh, there you go.
Right.
We wouldn't be barbarians if we did it.
Right. So, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean this is going to be a more tongue-in-cheek take on Street Fighter, but I don't think that's a bad idea. I think that's a kind of a good idea to make it silly and fun. I think that could work as long as you're not making fun of the game. You're
right.
You know, you're laughing along with the game, and you know, you're elevating the game into, you know, big budget movie caliber entertainment in a fun way. I think that could be really good.
Well, so has Street Fighter hasn't had like an actual campaign like the Mortal Kombat games of late have, right? Where you're kind of jumping between the different characters and playing through. Because in Street Fighter VI, it was kind of just play the ladder, play online, or create your own character and run around and
Well, historically, you know, all the Street Fighter games, if you play one character, they get like a little bit of setup and payoff at the end. You know, there's the loosest of stories.
Yeah. So how can you write a movie that sticks to the lore of it and take it serious unless you pick that one character and say, this is the canon story we're going to follow throughout the whole film, you know?
Or you look at the comics or the manga, the anime.
That's true, yeah.
And then those were done serious. You know, there was a serious tone to those. And I think a lot of them were great. But I do think at least I'm more willing to suspend disbelief for Bison creating this super terrorist organization that has a, you know, mutant electricity monster. You know, it's like for some reason in animation, it kind of, or especially in like in the very traditional anime style, a lot of these were done in, it kind of fits because a lot of those stories that I love at least have a little bit of, unrealistic premises.
Yes.
But I'm curious how it adapts to the, you know, that's part of the problem with that Jean-Claude Van Damme version. It's like, we're here with the UN again. You're from Japan and you're from USA and now we fight this fight to save our people. It's very odd.
Well, that's the hard thing about, you know, adapting games that were made before anyone cared very much about the story in video
True,
games.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, how do we make a Pac-Man movie? Well, nobody ever thought about it that way, so don't.
We bet Van Damme can do that jump kick that Guile does. Yeah. Cast him.
You know? Do it.
Yep. Get him in there. Yeah.
And make it about Guile for some reason.
with a very believable American accent.
I have high hopes for this. I'm the opposite of you, Mark. I liked Mortal Kombat, but I was always a Street Fighter guy first and foremost. And that franchise is close to my heart. I just them doing like a locked off, you know, completely flat shot of the two people in pure profile fighting each other would be rad. That would be rad to have that shot and, you know, full body top to bottom, just an extended fight sequence that's completely in profile. That would be awesome. Like, I don't know. Make that work. Figure that out. And then go back to
I'm curious.
Menu. I don't know.
We got a lot of good adaptations coming, though. You know, it is not slowing down. These are all literally just from this week. Kind of announcements of things that are happening.
Do you guys think that the success of Fallout kind of pushed a lot of companies now to Fallout? And I will throw in Last of Us as well.
Yes,
100%. Really pushed companies now to say, "Hey, we really got to start digging into this more."
This is the new gold rush for IP. We saw it happen with comic books, and I think for a while comic books were, you know, box office poison, and then it clicked, and then everybody's like, we got to do our comic book. What comic book properties do we have? And I think, you know, it'll happen. They're trying to do it with board games and literally any IP at this point. If you can prove to someone that there's enough people who care about that IP, you know, that's what's happening is, you know, very few original ideas are being turned into big budget movies. It's just that people are not willing to take risks on things that don't already have mind share. And
so you heard him, DLC listeners. Do what Jeff said and email president@paramount.com and say you want the DLC movie.
Paramount. Let's aim a little higher, Christian. Come on. Paramount.
Wow. Okay. How about dear president at Paramount?
How about
please
Apple
don't be listening
Amazon,
to this episode.
You know, the people that own James Bond now and, you know, the real movers and shakers.
Mickey@disney.com.
That's right. Right to Mickey Mouse, care of. All right, we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with more stories of the week right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Green Chef. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for clean eating. They deliver pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce, responsibly sourced proteins, and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a clean eating routine. Christian, you're a clean eater. You're not clean in any other way, but you're a clean eater. That's my understanding.
I mean, I have a mustache, so sometimes you got to, you know, have a napkin with you at all times.
Well, it's like having a broom constantly. You have a broom. You broom all your food as you eat it.
Cleanly eat it.
That's not clean eating. Come on.
Do you know what is clean eating, though? Creamy broccoli and potato soup. If it's chilly where you are, you want to make some creamy broccoli and potato soup. Or maybe you're looking at some coconut curry glazed cauliflower with some jasmine rice, mango chutney. You know, there are just some of the vegetarian meals available for you that I'm putting, you know, gently through my mustache into my mouth.
Well, that's what's so great is that, you know, if you're looking to create healthier eating habits this year and you want those things to last and you want real clean foods, Green Chef makes it easy. They've got recipes curated for all kinds of different lifestyles and dietary needs, as Christian was pointing out. He's a vegetarian. This is the place to go. Green Chef. They've got pre-made sauces and pre-portioned ingredients, so there's less prep and less mess, and there's more time to savor those restaurant-quality meals. I can't tell you how many times I have made a Green Chef meal for my family. My wife and I have sat down and went, man, if we had gotten this at a restaurant, we would have been completely satisfied. We would have thought this was a great restaurant. And I'm like, thank you. And then I turn to my children and they're like, Dad, we're not impressed. And I'm like, come on, look at it. It's amazing. You got to be kidding me.
What we do, we put it down and we go, here's your $30 plate of, we always say like, what would this cost at a restaurant? You know, like we put it down and I'm like, oh, here's your $35 entree. Well, guess how much it cost us for the whole box, the whole box. And it's, it's so fun.
It's great. The thing I like about having a meal kit is that I made it, even if my children aren't impressed by my culinary skills. I know that I made it. I know what's in it. And with Green Chef, you're getting, you know, fresh, organic produce, quality whole foods. You can stay on track doing that kind of stuff even on busy days. They've got these 5-minute salads. They've got ready to blend smoothies. They've got grab and go protein packed breakfasts. So it's not just the dinner meals, although those were our favorites. Green Chef even has a reset collection, which is available only for a limited time. Whether you're starting your weight loss journey or looking to maintain, Green Chef has you covered with a curated assortment of dietitian approved recipes that offer fiber support, are lower in saturated fat, and come in under 700 calories per serving. Do it. Give it a shot. Thrive all year with clean, easy meals from Green Chef. Go to greenchef.com/DLCfree and use code DLCfree, that's DLCFREE, to get started with free salads for 2 months plus 50% off your first box. Again, that's greenchef.com/DLCfree and use code DLCfree for free salads for 2 months plus 50% off your first box. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. All right. Well, I guess I have to be Mr. No Fun. I like being Mr. Fun, but not this week. I'm going to have to be Mr. No Fun. We're going to dig into this NetEase situation. Because, you know, we have a host of Rivals Assemble with us. We're going to talk a little bit about this craziness that happened early in the week, last week, about Marvel Rivals staff being fired, even though this is undoubtedly one of the biggest hits in video gaming going right now. We found out there are 40 million people playing Marvel Rivals, which is
crazy.
I love seeing somebody point out it's larger than the population of what is it?
Poland?
Poland, yeah. Larger than the population of Poland. That's a big deal.
Wild.
A lot of people playing it, and evidently not good enough for NetEase. Although, you know, the angle... There was a lot of early reporting of people just being like, here's another example of bad management, you know, of firing when you don't have to and yada, yada, yada. And that, you know, that is a recurring theme in the video game industry in the last 2-3 years. And one that I can understand people leaping to immediately seeing this news pop. But it does seem like there is an angle of geopolitics here that is specific to this story that may not be present in a lot of the other layoff stories we've covered over the last few years. You know, a lot of the stuff that's happening with this new administration in America and a lot of foreign investment wanting to contract and not, you know, not have risk here in the States when they don't know situation with how they'll be treated, specifically a Chinese company like NetEase wanting to contract and close down the Western arm of development, because this is not...
But also some of the other Eastern, you know, there's talks of a lot of the Japanese studios perhaps on the chopping block as well. And NetEase just really scaling back from what just a few years ago they were acquiring this, you know, who's who of talent with a lot of former Japanese great developers bringing shop over to NetEase. And it sounds like now they also might be going away.
Yeah, I mean, the portfolio was huge and frightening to see how much would have been controlled by one giant conglomerate. It sounds like they're selling off a lot of these studios or shuttering a lot of these studios that are not based in China, and you know, there's a lot of question marks around all of this. Mark, I'm curious, as somebody who is intimately tied with the Marvel Rivals community, what your take was this week, and maybe the roller coaster that you were on reading this news as it unfolded.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, the minute the news came out, we started getting all these messages from people saying, what, they're laying the, you know, the game is so successful and they're laying these people off. But, you know, when you start to kind of dig through, and I mean, I don't want to say that it's not, you know, developers that are getting laid off, but supposedly this was a smaller team here in the U.S., 6 to 8 people, they're saying, you know, weren't necessarily like the, I mean, I think the man, I can't think of his name, that kind of put up, he was on LinkedIn and kind of put the story out there.
Yeah.
It said he was the game lead, but he actually was the lead for the studio he was at, but not necessarily on the game itself. But for all the reasons you just said, Jeff, it seems like that is really one of the reasons why they're closing it down, is that, you know, this company overseas is deciding to pull a lot of their workforce out of the U.S. And, you know, you also need to look at, I think, where Rivals is now. The game is out. Obviously, now we can say that it's kind of in a live service game, right? So there are updates that are going to be continually coming out. I don't think we know exactly what the studio here was doing on the game, per se, that we're seeing in the game. Although this lead designer said that he potentially was the one that came up with the team up idea for the game. He said that that was his idea. You know, take that for what it is. You know, it is still disheartening to see 40 million people playing the game. We know they're making so much money on this game right now. And it's like, you couldn't just keep, you know, 6 to 8 people rolling over here. They were doing something, right? I mean, they helped me launch this game. But it almost seems like this is just the story kind of across the industry. When we see this, is there's a lot of outsourcing by these companies. And I think that a lot of these layoffs that we see are these companies that just aren't really needed anymore. These contractors, I guess, if you want to say, that are no longer needed anymore. And it sucks, man. Like, I wish it wasn't the case. But I think, you know, now that we have more of an insight with social media into these companies and how they're run, and the workers can immediately, when they get laid off, get out there and tell everyone about it. I would love to know how much of this stuff was kind of always going on and we just never knew about it, I guess, is the right way to say. And now that it's come to light in the, you know, recent years, I mean, it's, I don't know. But it's also even, I think, just a sign of the industry itself, right? Is you have these games now where I think of my son, he's a huge FIFA player. So of course, you know, they're making tons of money on the FIFA coins and all that. But his whole life, he's grown up with these free-to-play games. So he's big into Fortnite, you know, he's big into, you know, any game like that on his tablet or his phone. And so I couldn't even tell you the last game, probably if any game, that he's played, like a Last of Us or these story-driven games. Younger gamers today are the ones playing these free-to-play games. When you have so many options, you know, you're going to see these other studios start to get shut down. Not to say that's what happened here in this case, but I think that's why you're starting to see these layoffs kind of across the board. And it's tragic, man. It sucks. It's people's lives, you know, it's your livelihood. So
yeah, and it's we kind of don't have much insight into how big the team is working on Marvel Rivals that's based in China, but you know, the front facing comment on this was, hey, you know, we're still committed to this game, we're still gonna, you know, have a huge team working on it. I guess the commitment is a new character every 45 days, right? A new character entering the game every 45 days.
So this season, the first season, they did, of course, Fantastic Four. So we got two at the start of the season. Halfway, we got two more. They're basically committing themselves to two heroes every season, and the seasons are going to last about 12 weeks. So if you figure you get one at the beginning, one halfway through, I mean, you know, a lot of those heroes have to already be developed
in the pipeline. But that's a huge, that's a daunting pace for anybody. Even, you know, even a very, very successful team like that. So to keep that up, you know, it takes a lot of people working. You know, there was some other reporting this week that the CEO of NetEase, William Ding, supposedly like got really close to even canceling Rivals before it was released.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild that he was just not a fan of paying Disney the licensing fees, and was like, hey, let's just, why don't we have the team just make up their own characters? And they were like, well, we probably do better with Marvel characters.
Yeah, I mean, did he see what happened with Concord? A couple months ago,
yeah,
like, you know,
if you're examples.
Trying to, I mean, Overwatch, obviously Blizzard, just that name alone was able to, you know, push that game.
Yeah.
But it's like when you're trying to put out a hero shooter right now in a flooded market with it, you got to have that hook, and obviously Rivals, you know, having Marvel, I think just draws people to the game.
It's funny to me that somebody in that level of leadership role can say, hey, we should not do it this way. And then, you know, somehow gets overruled and they still do it that way. And it's a massive hit. And then he can be like, I'm presiding over a massive hit. And it's like, yeah, if you had had your way, it wouldn't have been one.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's wild, right? And supposedly they had had a partnership with Marvel since like 2017. So they'd already been working with Marvel, paying that license.
Yeah. Hey, a great leader is someone who's not afraid to give their opinions, but also listen to the opinions of others.
Yeah, I guess so.
And take that feedback, right? So
yeah, I guess
to some extent, this is
got to give him credit that he didn't put his foot down, you know?
But, yeah.
Evidently almost canceled the game because, you know, they were like, wait, can we get our own heroes? No? Well, I don't know if I even want to do this. Maybe we should just cancel it.
That's what I mean.
Didn't happen, obviously.
Peek behind the curtain a little bit here for this show specifically. Originally, DLC was called Marvel's DLC. And it was hosted by Captain America and Thor, and then a rotating third guest of every 45 days there'd be a new character.
That's right. Yeah.
But that licensing fee was just too much. So Jeff and I got tagged last minute.
Crazy.
Like, can't we just do this podcast with our own characters?
Well, you know what? And I hate they've said the every 45 days, and I've talked about this on our show, like, they're setting themselves up for the community to have that like disappointment. Like, don't say that, because guess what? When they don't do that, people are going to, you know, bring out the pitchforks and the torches. Like, you said every 45 days, we're going to get a new hero. And you
and
know,
like,
it's
we already brought out Human Torch. You have the torches. There's no other torches.
Christian, you and I both know that this show is never going to be hosted by Captain America and Thor. We were looking at like a Speedball and Toad at best. You know, it was like, we were like,
if they get killed in 5 minutes in Deadpool and Wolverine, they could be on DLC.
Anyway, I don't want to minimize the impact of what this could potentially be, because, you know, we're talking about Marvel Rivals, which is a big part of the story, but it's not the only part of the story, because NetEase, with this what seems like a top-down organizational shift in, you know, their strategy, contracting and really focusing on domestic development teams, domestic to them being, you know, Chinese development teams. As Christian pointed out, they're closing down, American teams, Japanese teams, game studios that they've acquired. They're, you know, they're selling off, they're defunding. This is a potentially huge shift in talent away from NetEase, or at least control of a lot of these development studios. So it remains to be seen how this is going to shake out, but it could end up being a pretty significant moment in the game industry. So we're going to keep our eye on it. That's for sure. But you know, I think anytime you hear literally the most successful game on the planet firing developers, it's like, well, that seems really backward, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. We've been the folks that we deal with more are like Marvel Games. So like Danny Koo from Marvel Games, that's kind of who as official partners of the game, that's kind of who we deal with.
Right.
So we do nothing with NetEase. So, you know, I couldn't even tell you who, you know, would be anybody here that we would be contacting with our show. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, like I said, we will keep our eye on it, but we have some games that we have been playing that we got to get to. So let's do it. Let's hit our playlist.
Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us on the playlist.
Well, Mark, I'm very excited to chat with you in more in detail about Marvel Rivals. I know the obviously, as somebody who hosts a show based all around that game, you've been playing a lot of it, and I know that new update, the 1.5 update, just hit, and I'm curious how you're feeling about the new characters, the state of the game as it is now.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the state of the game is everybody in the community is just hyped. Whenever you get new heroes coming in, of course, in any of these games, you're going to feel that way. So with Season 1.5, they've introduced now the final half of the Fantastic Four. We have Human Torch and The Thing added to the game. Both just play just like you would want them to play. I mean, that's the one thing that this game, I think, has captured for me and for a lot of the people that are my co-hosts and the other people that listen to our show is all the characters just feel so good to play. I play on PC, but I use a controller just because I just like the visceral feel of the way the characters play. Mm-hmm. And the new character, The Thing, that they put in the game, I mean, he has this ability where you can just rush forward. You're crashing through the environments. I mean, literally knocking down columns. Ceilings are coming down, and then he's able to smash down on the ground and pop characters up in the air. And then they gave him what you would think of the big haymaker that he would have. He kind of winds it up, and by the time the characters hit the ground, you're popping that off and sending characters flying. He just plays great. So much fun to play. And of course, it is clobbering time for his ultimate. So you're able to smash even harder down on the ground and pop characters up. They've added the Human Torch. And, you know, one of the things you always think of the Human Torch is he's able to throw some flames around and write the number 4. Well, you can pretty much do that as him. You can. He's a flyer. So if you've played the game, he's kind of plays like Iron Man or Storm in the game. So you're constantly up in the air. And he's able to put these little AOE fields kind of down on the ground. You can have up to 4 of them. And then you hit an ability and they link. So on like a control point or a payload, you can kind of toss that down and create this little AOE field to keep the enemies off. So just adding them to the game completely changes the meta. And like, that's one of the things I think that they're nailing with the every 45 day or every 6 weeks is like the game just constantly feels fresh. Mm. And as somebody who played a lot of Overwatch, you know, that game a lot of times just felt very stagnant. It was like the same meta. You're playing the same characters. And I mean, Marvel Rivals, if they can keep this pace, it's like every 6 weeks, it's almost a new game. I mean, they delivered a new map. So it takes place in Central Park. And have you played at all this season to kind of see
that?
You have not. Christian?
I played the beginning, the first part
season
of Final
Zero?
Four.
Yeah. Okay.
Or season one, but not 1.5.
Okay. Because there's a story that's kind of a through line through all of this. And like, that's the one thing that I think Overwatch kind of missed. Because that's the one thing that they're doing is they're kind of taking everything that Overwatch didn't do or what the community wanted, and they're like putting that into the game. So the story in this game is, I mean, Overwatch, obviously you had the comics and the shorts, which were incredible. I mean, the Overwatch shorts are amazing.
Yeah.
But they're putting in these little events into the game, and you can actually go in and read the lore. So the story of the game, you have these two dooms that created, they call it the Chronoverse, but they're battling. And so they're creating these different little multiverses. In season one right now, Dracula has taken over New York City. And there's vampires all over. So that's why the first map we had was Midtown, all dark and gothic. And now with this season, the story, or season 1.5, the story's continued. Dracula's planted his castle in Central Park, and you're battling through that. And so this little event that they put into the game, every day or so, you're unlocking part of the story. So to me, that's what's been super cool, is like you get to go in and every day play a little bit, do whatever little missions you want to do, and then you unlock the story that continues through the thread. So it's not only just this hero shooter game, but there is this kind of neat little Marvel story that's in there that they're kind of penning with the different heroes. And, you know, of course, Human Torch and The Thing coming in adds to the story as well. So to have that in a hero shooter, they've just nailed that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which I think is super cool. So I would recommend people, I mean, if you're a Marvel fan, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Just try it out. It's free, right? Go play it.
Yeah. I mean, that is the best. It's funny that we talked about, you know, the CEO being like, do we need the Marvel part? Because I feel like that's the best part of Rivals.
That's the hook.
Like how Marvel-y it is and how deeply Marvel, like it's ingrained in every aspect of the game. It feels like, man, it really is fan service. You know,
everything. Awesome. I mean, well, that's the thing too. We laugh. I mean, and this, of course, just being the free-to-play game, but they're putting skins in this game almost every week on the show. It's like, all right, what's the new skin this week? And, you know, it's kind of crazy that I have to like talk about this on a podcast, but like that's what they're doing in all those skins. It'll tell you what issue it's from, what year that issue came out.
Awesome.
And you can pull up your Marvel Unlimited, go read that issue if you want and get the backstory on it.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, man, like they're really doing a great job with the game, and it's really kind of just impressed all of us.
What's your current favorite hero to play?
So in competitive, I try to generally play a strategist. So Cloak and Dagger are my main healers. For the tank, the Vanguard, I usually play Venom right now. But of course, Thing being added in, Thing is a ton of fun to play. If I'm playing competitive and end up playing a DPS character or the duelist, depends. I like Iron Man. Storm's pretty good. They nerfed her a little bit with this patch. But Squirrel Girl is pretty good. Don't doubt Squirrel Girl. She's you're just going to sit back and just keep tossing the acorns. Yeah, she's a lot of fun to play.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Very cool. Christian, are you tempted to jump back into Rivals?
It's still on my hard drive, so I haven't jumped in for 1.5, but it's still there, and I see it, and it's hanging out. I think the last time I played, I was actually checking it out via the cloud, because I always like seeing how that works for, even though I'm not competitive, but for an online competitive game, and it ran great. They did a really good, nice job. I mean, that's the thing, I think, for me. That seems like
that's
another
not the
big
thing. The Thing's a character.
Yeah.
Oh, dang it. Oh, man. Sorry. I mean,
that's the human torch for me.
That's the Sue Storm. It's been shockingly stable. You know, again, 40 million people playing this game. And very rarely do you hear about this isn't working. This season launched broken. These characters aren't playing. Yeah. I can't get into the game. Like, so far, so good. And I think that's another big reason why it's been so successful. When people have the time to play, they're able to.
More stable than Poland.
I don't know if that's how that works, but
historically. Anyway, no, that's awesome. So one of the things we talked about last week is how a bunch of these new announcements for Overwatch 2 seem to be in direct reaction to the success of Marvel Rivals. And Mark, I know you've been playing the new season 15 of Overwatch 2 as well.
Yeah, I dipped in because the crew that I have, all my co-hosts, we for the last year have probably been playing Overwatch like once a week, Thursday nights, get together, play Overwatch 2. And then that kind of led us into creating the podcast for Rivals. So I had to see what this new update was going to be. Like, are these perks really going to be game changing? I did dip in. I only just played a handful of matches. I don't know what the time frame is, but if you're not familiar with this, what they've done essentially is they've added perks to the heroes. So if you play, it seemed like it was maybe at like the 3 or 4 minute mark into the match, you level up your character to level 2 and you pick what's called a minor perk. And it's kind of like Heroes of the Storm used to do, where you get a small little, you know, do you want this one or do you want that one? Play for another 3 or 4 minutes, and then you get your major perk that they add in. And that could be a little bit more game-changing. So just as an example, playing a tank, playing Orisa. She's the big, you know, kind of cow robot, if you want to say. She throws the spear. So her first minor perk, you can make it where when she fortifies herself and makes herself strong, it adds a little bit of, I think it's 100% health that slowly degrades over time. So you can get a little bit extra health. And then like the major perk you can pick for her is she charges up her spear. And as long as you hold it, when you shoot it, it actually shoots through the enemies and knocks them back further. So it is definitely game changing. Now, for people that haven't been playing the game a lot, you may not notice it. But one of the things about playing a hero shooter over like a MOBA is you start to learn and get a feel for how the character that's literally across from you or the character you're playing, what's expect out of them. So this actually does change that up. So for people that have been playing Overwatch and even Overwatch 2 for years, now kind of having that unknown of, you know, maybe you can't push in as far on this control point because that Orisa has that extra 100% health. So it's really changing up the way that I think players are going to have to, I don't want to say relearn the game, but they're going to have to, you know, take things into account now that they didn't before.
Does it signal to the opposing team what perks have been chosen by each player?
The only thing I noticed is the scoreboard. So if you go to the scoreboard, it shows you an icon, but then you have to learn what the icons are, which the couple of matches I played, I had no idea what they were. So it really wasn't, you know, like in a MOBA, that's one of the things about a MOBA is you can, once you encounter an enemy, you can start building your character when you go back to the shop. Like, do I need more magic armor? Do I need more physical armor? Like, where this doesn't seem that drastic. And I guess it would just kind of come with you playing the game to know what you would want.
Yeah, I mean, with Heroes of the Storm, you could tab and see everybody's selections of all of their talents. Yeah. So you could literally know, you could see how somebody's building their character and be like, oh, okay, I get it. They're doing this build.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And I think it would come with Overwatch. Like I said, It does show you, cause, and especially it's just two little icons next to the name. So it's not like you're going to learn a lot.
Right.
But again, I didn't study all that, so I didn't really know. Yeah. I'm just picking what I wanted to pick for Orisa. I think it is definitely going to change the game up. The thing I'm more excited about, though, for that is the next season when they add in the new mode, the stadium, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Where it's more of a MOBA-ish, where they're actually going to have more of a storefront. You can buy these completely game-changing perks. That's totally going to change, I think, the game up and, you know, add a little bit more excitement. But you're right. I really think Overwatch is feeling the pressure from Rivals. I mean, hey, they added loot boxes back to the game. Isn't everybody excited about loot boxes?
For me, the most exciting thing was third person, which is not in the game yet, right? That's a ways off.
Right, that'll be in the stadium mode. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been wanting Overwatch to have third person. It always felt weird to me to have costumes and stuff in a game where I'm in first person mode. Like I don't get the joy of seeing the cool thing I unlocked until, you know, the score screen at the end or whatever. So the idea of you know, going to third, which feels like a direct pull from Rivals, right? That's
definitely.
Yep. So
I'm curious if they can maintain any semblance of pace, though. I think that's one of the big, we just talked about Marvel Rivals and the pace that game continues to run on. And Overwatch 2 has announced a lot of changes, but a lot of them feel far out still. And I'm curious, you know, to what extent Microsoft up high is kind of demanding stuff to be done and when it's going to be done and when something is deemed successful or not. I'm curious how much room they have and how much runway they have to implement a lot of this stuff. And then what's next? Because I don't think Marvel Rivals is just sitting there going, well, Overwatch 2 did this. I mean, they seem like they are clearly on top of things. So it'd be interesting to see where we are a year from now even.
So if you haven't really dipped in, did you see the, you know, Jeff the Little Land Shark? They added around Christmas time, there was a special mode for Jeff. So I don't know if you guys saw that, but they literally put Splatoon into Marvel Rivals.
That's hilarious.
It was a Jeff, and you were literally spraying all over, just coloring the whole map. And then they just did this other one in January, and it was like Rocket League added into Marvel Rivals. So you're running around as Star-Lord, Black Widow, and Iron Fist. And you were getting a ball and running around an arena that looked just like Rocket League. So, you know, just we were trying to think, like, what else could they possibly add to this game?
Yeah.
Rivals is, they're just firing on all cylinders. That's, you know, cool. Overwatch, I think they still double down so much on their esports, even though they shut down the Overwatch League and all that. They're really trying to build that game to be, I don't want to say hyper balanced, but it's like everything with Overwatch is balance, balance, balance. Where the Rivals team has just flat out said, like, there may be some heroes that come out that are broken, but guess what? We're introducing more heroes and we want to see what you, the community, does. And that's why they don't give you a role queue. They want you within each match, like, rather than, you know, say, oh, this character is overpowered, figure it out. Like, your teammates, when you die, switch to a different hero and figure out what counters that. That's why I think now Rivals kind of
Do you prefer that? Is it, I mean, because I feel like, for years, the ultimate, you know, goal in any competitive shooter was balance. Like, that's the paragon to shoot for, is like have a perfectly balanced game, which is, you know, impossible. But is it better to be like, screw it, who cares? Just have fun.
I will say, as a Overwatch 2 player, originally I was all about balance and I was all about, give me role queues. I want to go in. I want to know who I have.
Right.
And even you can go back to episode 1 or 2 of Rivals Assembled. And I was like, why is there no role queue? This is crazy. Like, this is wild. Fast forward to today. Please don't put a role queue in Marvel Rivals. Like, I am so now knowing, playing so much and knowing the meta and knowing the counters and knowing all that. That's the game.
Yeah.
Like, that is what it is. Like, maybe we'll go in this time with 3 healers, 2 DPS, and 1 tanker this time, you know, and then you push that payload, you get to the next point. Okay, let's switch it now. Let's go to just 2 healers, 3 DPS, and 1 tank. And so being able to do that on the fly actually, I think, makes the game what it is. And it makes it much more fun, you know, because, you know, you're not locking into just that one hero. It's like, we're playing the match and I can swap around. And then, of course, it leads to toxicity in the chat. You know, you're going to get all that. Especially if you're playing competitive, but that's just the fun of it. I don't know.
Without knowing your group, do you play, you know, you solo queue or do you play with randoms?
Yeah. So my co-hosts, two play on console and then, me and another one, we play on PC. So we can't play comp together.
Oh, okay.
And usually we record the show, we get into some quick play, but most of my time playing is just solo. I either play quick play or if I'm going in comp, I'm just kind of go in and
that's great.
This season I've been more like, I'll just fill whatever needs to be done. But competitive, man, like it's rough. It's rough out there, especially those lower levels. It's still a lot of fun. I still have a lot of fun playing it. It's fun.
Awesome. Well, that's not the only thing that's been on your playlist. You've been playing some other non-competitive stuff, which we will get to right after we take a quick break for another sponsor. All right, Mark. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, I know we got a game on there that both of you have played, so mm-hmm. I'll hold off on that and let one of you bring that up. But have you played UFO 50?
Christian was very high on it for a while. Yes, at the end of the year. I have it sitting on my hard drive, and I find it so daunting to be like, which one of these will I play?
Well, that is the thing. I actually still have not played every game in there, but Same. It's become this like, I can play Rivals, you know, get a little just frustrated or whatever, shut it off, fire up UFO 50, you just kind of go on that like retro trip, pick a game. It's awesome. I mean, Derek Yu, obviously the creator of Splunky, they created something very special with UFO 50. I hope they actually port this to like Switch and other platforms because it's a game that I think really just would thrive on a handheld. I mean, of course you can play it on a Steam Deck. It's cool, man. There's some great games in there. Warp Tank is one of my favorites. You're this little tank and you kind of move around and you can warp up to the wall above you. And so part of the puzzle is trying to figure out how to get through the map and how to figure out like, how do I get so I'm on the side of the wall and then get to the point where there's, you know, things moving in the level that can kill you and you got to shoot them and it's great. There's another game in there called Kick Club and it's essentially Bubble Bobble, but you're a little soccer player and you kick the ball to, you know, if you think Bubble Bobble, you'd always like hit the enemies to fill them in the bubble and then hit them and that would take them out. Well, to clear the level here, you kick the ball at the enemies, but then you got to go get the ball. So it's not like you just are constantly shooting the bubble. So there's all these neat little, just gameplay mechanics put into these games. And of course, just the whole wrapper around it of being this fictional retro company and kind of going through the games and seeing the progression of how the games go from, you know, almost the early 8-bit games to, you know, I mean, I don't even know, are they 16-bit maybe by the end? I'm not sure. But there's like an RTS in there. There's a first person dungeon crawler in there. It's cool. So I definitely recommend, especially if someone's a retro gamer, UFO 50 is a no-brainer.
Yeah, it reminds me of, people are like, I have a great idea for a video game. And, you know, you always see that thing from actual game developers of like, ideas are not the problem. We have no shortage of ideas. And I feel like UFO 50 is the ultimate proof of that. It's like, look at all the ideas crammed in here.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome. Very cool. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Avowed, because that's the last game on your list that Christian and I both have also been playing. A big game of the moment, Obsidian's big role-playing game. Talked about it a little last week, but Mark, first of all, what are you playing it on, and what has your experience been so far with Avowed?
I am playing it on PC.
Okay.
So I have a 4080, so it is looking pretty good, pretty sharp, so it's running good. Yeah, I'm digging it, man. Like I'm somebody who, you know, loved the Elder Scrolls series, obviously played Skyrim. I mean, I'm even an Elder Scrolls Online player as well. So I kind of love that whole series. Love the Fallout series. I mean, Fallout New Vegas still is probably my favorite Fallout. It's always Fallout 3 I like just because it was kind of like the first of that style that I had played. And I just love the setting of that. But I mean, Obsidian knocked it out of the park, right, with Fallout New Vegas. And this game just kind of carries that on. I mean, I don't want to say it's like a progression of what they did with, was it Outer Worlds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't
that the, yep.
It kind of, you can kind of feel that as you're playing it. But the best part that I've really been enjoying is definitely just the combat of it. You know, I went into this game thinking I'm going to play a sword and board. I'm going to go in and just kind of melee, happen to come across a wand. Let me equip this wand and see what happens. And then was just like, okay, I guess I'm a wizard now. But I'm a wizard with a shield bash. And then, you know, earlier today I picked up this, I found a memory kind of overlooking a cliff and turned around and there were all these skeletons there, but I had happened to pick up a axe that could freeze the enemies. So then I started like, okay, well, I guess I'm wielding a shield and an axe, or why don't I do a wand in this axe? And so like the just opportunities or the different things you can do in the game is great with the combat. So far, the main story I would say is it's okay. Like I don't want to say I don't know what's going on because I'm listening to everything, but I actually didn't play much of Pillars of Eternity. So kind of this game world is a little, you know, I'm not too caught up on all the lore of it, but you know, my envoy, I've been to Paradis. Is that the city? And you know, I'm kind of going out now. So far I'm definitely enjoying the game. It's gorgeous. I mean, very colorful. You know, all the different just fauna and all that that's kind of throughout the world is very cool. I think they really kind of nailed it with it. And it doesn't have, I mean, it is a big game world, but it kind of feels a little bit smaller sense, I guess, because you are able to kind of fast travel, which I mean, you can in a lot of those games, but everything seems very condensed.
Right.
In the game. The one thing I will say that I don't want to say I'm disappointed on, but the cities don't feel as alive, I think, as I think they should. Like everybody just seems like they're just kind of standing there waiting for me to walk up to them. And you'll hear people say something when you walk by. But I think of a game that I played recently, like Star Wars Outlaws, like you go into a cantina and like, it just was like fully immersive, seemed like everybody was on their own, you know, path, their own story. This seems a little bit empty in that sense. But you know, for just the fun of the gameplay so far, I'm digging it. For sure.
I think I would agree with that. I think it does feel like everybody's there for the player's benefit rather than going about their own daily lives and you just happen to be there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's a huge knock against the, I mean, it is a step, half step behind, you know, something like a Skyrim where it feels like that whole world is just breathing. And I'm interacting with it and I can do all these interact with it in a variety of different ways and sneak into people's houses and do stuff behind their back. And every little thing in the game world is a thing. And I can kind of exist in that world however I want. That's not really how Avowed works, right? There's like two things that are interactable in a room full of tons of knickknacks. And, but I would perhaps describe that as a streamlining of things. So you're not distracted by all the minutia so much. But I can understand some folks maybe feeling like it's diminished in some way.
Yeah. But again, with all the other positives that the game has, I mean, that's just a small, small little nit, I think I would say, out of all of it. But I do like too, I mean, you know, you mentioned you go into a room, there's only a couple things in there. That's been nice. Because, you know, Skyrim or even like an Elder Scrolls Online, you go, you just want to pick up everything.
Yeah.
You're just completely over encumbered. Here, I mean, you're incentivized to pick the things up because then you're able to break it down and it becomes mats for you to upgrade your gear and stuff.
Yeah.
It's great.
Christian, these aren't necessarily always your favorite kinds of games. I'm curious, now that you've had some time with Avowed, what you think of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how far you both are. I'm about 15 hours into the game. For folks that have played, I finished the main quests on Strange Shores, Message from Afar, An Untimely End, The Animancy Method, and I just finished Ancient Soil, and then side quests along the way, because I believe if you kind of just mainline this game, it's only, you know, it can maybe be wrapped in 15 hours, and I don't feel, based on where the narrative, what happened at the end of Ancient Soil, which I don't want to spoil for folks, is not you're nearing the end. It felt like, you thought we opened things up after Message from Afar? We're opening it up again. Like, here we go. So I will start by saying I love this game. I think it is incredible. And I think a reason I struggle with a lot of, quote, these games is the idea of save the world, but go run a 7-Eleven for 15 hours first. Save, you know, your kid is being tortured, but why don't you go open up this barbecue restaurant and serve barbecue for 10 hours first? And Avowed doesn't mess with any of that. Like one thing and this might rub people the wrong way, but one thing that I really love about it, again, 15 hours in and where I am in the story, at no point am I building a base. I'm not customizing my ship.
Oh, I feel
don't know
that.
When that became a part of this genre of game, but it is. And I think a lot of people love it, but it was never something that my ship in Starfield could have been a porta potty. You know, like I was just like, yeah. Does it fly? Does it get me there? Like,
yep, exactly.
That's all I need it to be. And the way Avowed handles its party system and its camps is so smart. You know, you create your camp, and it's where you upgrade your weapons and do most of your upgrades and get story beats from your companions. Party members, of which at this part in the story, I think I have three that I can cycle through is where I am. Yeah, I have three. And the person who's not with you is then back at your camp, but you can fast travel back to your camps at any point. And then when you leave your camp, you get the option, and I love this, and maybe other games do it, and I just didn't pay attention to it. When you leave your camp, you can say, leave here, or leave back to where you were, which only works in a video game. Right. They don't even have a narrative reason for it. It's not like, and then you spellbind, and you're just like, no, you needed to go to camp to upgrade and to get these story beats, but I'm at the far end of this ravine, but the last place I was able to set up camp was back by this town. Great, go to camp and then leave, and you're back by the ravine. Love that.
There's a bunch of design decisions, it seems, in Avowed, yes, where it's just like, okay, it's a video game. Like,
yes, there's no ammo.
Nobody likes to carry a bunch of arrows. I don't want to have to worry about it. Just you have a bow.
Yeah.
Shoot as many arrows as you want, buddy.
You're Legolas. Just go.
Knock yourself out.
You got a flintlock rifle that you love using? Yeah, you got to reload it. But where are all those pellets? No one cares.
Who cares?
You got them.
It's a video game, buddy. It's a video game, you know? Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like there's a number of things like that where, you know, you talk about I don't want to, you know, customize my ship or whatever it is. And I think there is – this category of game has for a long time been the selling point has been, here's a world that you are allowed to exist in and do things, do a variety of things that are your choice. You can exist in this world in a number of different ways. And Avowed is like, that's cool, but that's not really what we're doing. You're here to do a few things, and we're going to do those things and make sure they're fun. It's not about living in this world. It's not about like creating a vast, interconnected world that you can place yourself in a variety of roles. No, it's about experiencing this quest and doing it and these other side quests. And I think, you know, honestly, some of my favorite content of Avowed so far has been the side quests.
Yeah,
which
mine
are
too.
Not skimpy, you know, they're not thin.
Yeah, some can be, but some multiple step large narrative things that our guest last week when I listened to the show, like I'm pretty sure you get narrative choices or dialogue things because you did this lengthy side quest, like it
absolutely
links, but I'm like I don't know if Mark was going to hear this because I don't know if Mark did the side quest that I did when I did it, and that stuff feels so
unique.
Well,
the choice I made to either let this person live or you know, give this thing back or take that or flip this switch instead of that one, and like all these different choices you make, the game does such a good job of popping those things back up into the world and making it so like, hey, remember that girl that you let go? Here she is. And if you ask her to return that favor, she will, you know, like that. It makes all those choices feel fun. You know, like I'm sure you guys experienced this pretty early on. There's a moment where you're just wandering through the town of Paradis and the guard is like, hey, could you help me out, Envoy? I really need your help. This person was trying to do some contraband. And you're like,
with the cart? It's on the cart?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You're like, I found the grenades. And she's
I totally found it.
Yeah. Do they have grenades? And I was like, I don't know. What are they going to tell me later about this? I let them go. But like everything is like that. Where and I think that's really fun.
Yeah.
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 So I love the game. I wanted to say all that up top, but I do think it also has some notable things that are worth critiquing or hopefully that could be approved either in Outer Worlds 2, maybe that's too far in development, or the director of Avowed says they want to keep playing in this world and stuff that I hope they continue to evolve or tweak. So it looks gorgeous. It is a very pretty game, but I've also reinstalled Cyberpunk 2077 because as I was playing Avowed, I was just like, am I misremembering Cyberpunk 2077? And Avowed is still very much the style of game, the Bethesda or Obsidian style of game, that when I am talking to someone, for all intents and purposes, so I played about 15 hours of the game, I don't think I'm exaggerating, gentlemen, when I say three of that, my controller's been on my desk. Like, it's a head talking to me. Or sometimes it's not even a head, it's just a picture. It is a literal static picture on the screen. And it's like, I am now going to dump exposition on you for 10 minutes. You can push a button once, but you don't need to do any. Or the when you're talking to the characters, cool, interesting story, well voice acted. I love the characters. I think they're very engaging.
I think some of the voice acting is uneven personally, but go ahead.
I've had fun with it, but I look back and I revisited Cyberpunk and it's like, dog, that's Keanu Reeves. You know, like it looks like him. I can walk around. I can do stuff while things are happening. I'm not locked into this, you know, just above the nipples, just above the hair headshot for everybody. Like, I think the game could be so much more if it allowed for a little more freedom in those moments. And then my other big kind of, I guess, nit with the game is just the amount of loading screens. Again, I went back to Cyberpunk and it almost feels like there aren't any in Cyberpunk. And that is a game that originally was intended to launch on the Xbox One.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Which Cyberpunk struggled when it came out. Let's not forget that. But, you know, I'm in Avowed and I'm in a cave, or I'm outside and I enter a cave and that cave is a load. I was in a building and I opened a door within that same building and that was another load. And I feel like there's enough of that in the game. I don't know if it's an Unreal Engine 5 something or other, but like that combined with the static image exposition dumps, like you get, again, it's a full on load, like it's just a straight up load screen. They don't try to mask it with you're not Mass Effecting or Metroid Priming up and down an elevator. It's like,
sounds like somebody never played Morrowind.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it reminded me almost of the Oblivion actual loading screens, because they would always, you know, would
you
have
like rotate, can rotate things in Oblivion. Look, it's three dimensional.
Could you? I thought that was Skyrim.
Skyrim?
It was Skyrim, because I think Oblivion was just kind of like these white and brown static images or whatever of an elven building, and then it would just say whatever on the bottom, and that was it.
I do remember Morrowind is agonizing on that level. Like literally I'm like, I don't need to go into that building bad enough. I could open that door and sell some stuff, or I could just drop it on the ground and keep walking
and just move on.
I'm not gonna do that to myself.
Avowed aren't that bad, but they're just shocking when they happen. Like, I'm outside. It's like, oh, I'm following this thief into a cave to go break up this whatever, and then I walk into the cave and it's like, how big is this cave going to be? Holy crap.
I mean, I don't
know. It's going to be a whole city. No, it's just a cave.
I guess you're not wrong. Excuse me. You're not wrong. But the SSD hard drive of it all, they're very brief. It doesn't bother me as much as it sounds like it bothers you.
Well, they're not super long, the loads in and of themselves, but I think it's that combined with this Avowed talks at you a lot. And again, I think it's a difference in how they present their cutscenes and characters versus, again, something like Cyberpunk or even Final Fantasy 16, which I know now is action RPG and very different. But like, that's the other end of not interactive, but very engaging cutscene. Mm-hmm. And Cyberpunk is engaging. You're in the world. You can be drinking. You can, you know, do whatever you want. And Avowed is still, all intents and purposes, it still in many ways feels like Morrowind. You know, it's like feels like that is the game design that Obsidian and Bethesda have taken and just keep doing it. And I feel like games have done better since.
I think you're making a valid point. The only reason I would defend it is because I don't think of it in the same way. I mean, one of my biggest criticisms with playing, you know, Final Fantasy, the whichever one was latest one.
16.
That one, I feel like I could set my controller down for long stretches because I am just watching a cutscene. And the contrast that I'm trying to draw here is that the way I engage with these games and Bethesda games is that this is a different gameplay mode. There are times when I'm playing the action game and there's times when I'm playing the role-playing game. And the role-playing game is, which of these dialogue choices am I going to select? How am I going to react to this conversation? And yes, some of the dialogue choices are, can I ask you this question about the deep lore of this world and hear you pontificate for an hour and a half about it? And I can understand how you might interpret that as being like a cutscene, but it's not a passive experience. It's like I am.
Well, no, but then I would point to Cyberpunk.
Right.
That's why I brought up both, right? There's two different versions of it. And Avowed, I like those moments. I think those character choice moments are fun. But then Avowed also, and again, I love this game. These are the things that are kind of annoying me as I, you know, spent 15 hours with the game in what, 3 days or something, whatever it's been. There are times too where there aren't choices though. It's just straight up. I'll be vague. You're learning about what's inside you.
Right.
And there are no choices.
Well, you're right. Those sequences are kind of agonizing. You're right.
Christian, how did you feel about the dialogue in Baldur's Gate 3?
He didn't play that game.
Oh, you didn't play it. Okay.
That is a blind spot. Because
it kind of reminds me of that, where it's like the character's kind of offset to the side, kind of, you know, just looking at you that way, and you have your choices. But I think with that game, I don't want to say did better in terms of its dialogue, because, I mean, obviously Baldur's Gate 3 is kind of in its own realm now. But it was like you knew your dialogue choices could really drastically change what was going to happen next. I think the dialogue you're saying here, kind of like you said, Christian, sometimes you're only getting one or two choices. And then sometimes it's just the classic, like, big lore dump, and then that option you know will be gone, and the same exact choices will be there for you to basically click through and then basically end the dialogue session. But, you know, again, a lot of that stuff is interesting that's in there, I think.
I have been thinking a lot about ways that story is conveyed in video games. And I think there's an untapped potential that no one has done. I think there's a way to convey story in video game that doesn't borrow exclusively from more passive medium, isn't just people talking at you. I think there's a way to get at it in a different fashion. And I'm curious to see as this thing continue the genre, video games as a whole, as they continue to evolve, how people tackle that in a different way. Because I don't think we've come to the best delivery method. And I think maybe that's kind of what you're getting at too, Christian, is that, I mean, maybe you believe it has been found in other games, but I feel like there's some still undesigned way, you know, undiscovered way that will help that with video games. And I'm not sure exactly what it is yet, but.
Yeah. And then anyway, my last point on Avowed, I've played it natively on my PC. I played it via GeForce Now, which is a PC version of it. And then I had a buddy, Kyle, friend of the show, was like, hey, is this game worth buying? Should I go buy this game right now? You know, just this game. And I was like, honestly, you should just sign up for a month of Game Pass Ultimate and try it on xCloud, because I bet it's pretty good. And I do think, despite Xbox advertising, this is an Xbox, this is an Xbox, this is an Xbox, people forget that for $25 a month, they have an Xbox. And so I took down a couple of, you know, raid bosses or whatever you'd call them, because I wanted to try it out via xCloud. It's an inferior cloud streaming version of the game than GeForce Now, but for an all-inclusive, whatever it is, $25 a month, very playable, looks and runs great, easy way to jump in if you're curious about Avowed and you don't have an Xbox or a PC that can run it. Highly recommend trying Game Pass Ultimate and streaming it.
Cool. That's great. All right, well, that's Avowed, all three of us playing and enjoying. Christian, what else is on your playlist?
I want to mention one other game. Only because our friends of the show over at Enter the Aether have been preparing for their PSP episode. And over on their episodes, they've been talking about various PSP games that they've been playing. And that got me curious to go back into my Sony handheld library as well. And the game that jumped out at me that I really wanted to re-dive into is Metal Gear Acid, with Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater getting its re-release and that date coming out. I love, Jeff, you know I love Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Jeff, did you ever play Metal Gear Acid? Did you have a PSP?
I had a PSP, but I did not play that game. No.
Mark, did you ever, were you PSPing back in the day?
I had a PSP, but did not have that game.
Maybe. So if you look up review scores for Metal Gear Acid, they're very mediocre. You know, probably high sixes or sevens or something like that. Metal Gear Acid 2 reviewed better. This is a game, whatever it is, 20 years ahead of its time. It is wild. It is a turn-based tactics deck-building game. It is every game coming out right now, but they did it with a massively popular IP during that IP's heyday, and we just weren't ready for it. Like I had to revisit back, because that's what I remember it being, and I remember playing it on the bus as I was like going to work and like it being this perfect, nice little handheld game, and for whatever reason, I don't think here in the West it really connected with us the way it did in Japan and other places, and it wasn't as big of a game. They came out with Peace Walker later and Portable Ops, I think, that were more traditional Metal Gear experiences. But Jeff, maybe go straight to 2, because I think it's the better story. Metal Gear Acid 1's, I mean, it is, it does like the Metal Gear thing times 10. It's like a very bizarre Metal Gear story, which is saying something. But the core gameplay of it being this turn-based, you do a move, then the enemies move, you have the timer for how many moves you can do, and you're playing cards, and as you're getting further into the game, you're creating your deck. When you go into a mission, you get to, I think it's 6 cards, you get to pick to take with you, and you use them, and they're spent. And what does that mean for your strategy? Dude, Jeff, I think if this game came out this year, it'd be one of your other 5s at the end of the year.
That's
it
wild.
Is incredible. So I wanted to highlight it. And again, as Into the Aether was talking about PSP, it made me think back to Metal Gear Acid. And if you like the games that Jeff talks about, go revisit Metal Gear Acid. I think it'll scratch that itch.
Would you say if you liked Midnight Suns that you might like that game? Because that was move the characters around, drop the cards down. Like,
kind of
like what you're describing a little bit.
Yes, but with the frustration of it's built around a PSP. So it's smaller. Your point of view is a little tighter. It also, Metal Gear camera is a little awkward at times. But yeah, I mean, it is wild to think that, yes, the Metal Gear Acid slowly snake crawled so that Midnight Suns could run. Like, there's definitely a connection there for sure.
I think Midnight Suns might be on my like most underrated games of the last half decade.
That's great.
I think because of like the weird time it came out, like right at the end of the year, it's an odd game because it had the kind of weird relationship sim thing built on that I think turned a lot of people off. But
the Persona kind of in there, like,
so rivals good.
Didn't it do? It had weird ass costumes. Like, the box art was like weird. Marvel Rivals is like, these are cool Marvel costumes. Midnight Suns was like, do you like them in black?
But it has like all leather? The like classic costumes in it too.
You just didn't make it front and center.
Man, that game is so good. Midnight Suns. It bums me out that they couldn't make a sequel, because I bet the sequel would have been amazing for that game.
You know what they did make a sequel to? Metal Gear Acid. And it's great.
All right, I want to talk about one more game on my playlist. We talked a lot last week about Civilization VII. Which is, you know, a game I'm still playing a lot of, and you know, still I think a big part of the scene right now, right? A major release that a lot of people are getting into. I'm playing an indie game with a single developer that might be a fun alternative to folks. If you're not willing to plop down $70 to try a Civilization VII, but you know you're into the idea of making a little city. About managing resources and building a city. Let me tell you about a little game that has absolutely charmed me this week. It's called Dawn Folk. Dawnfolk, Dawnfolk, made by one guy. His name is Darren Keller. And he makes it very clear that he made this game. When you boot up the game, it has his picture. And he's like, hey, I made this game. It's a labor of love. Please like my game. And I just – I'm charmed by that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's lovely. And he clearly – he said he'd been thinking about this game for many years and finally made it. And it – real labor of love. I guess he used to work in AAA game development, did this struck out on his own. All – background tapestry that I enjoy supporting over and above the fact that this is actually a fantastic little game. Dawnfolk basically is a grid, a series of tiles, and each tile is a different terrain type. And you have a little home base in the center of these tiles. And a number of the tiles, they can be things like mountains or forests or desert or, a lot of different biome types. And the edge of those, this little grid, there's extra tiles that are sort of blacked out. You can still kind of see what they might be. Some of them have big question marks on them that might have special events or treasures to be discovered. And you can spend a resource called light to illuminate those tiles, basically open up those tiles and expand your reach, expand the size of your tile base, your city, for lack of a better term. And what you're doing, so you can spend that light, and you need to generate light, but you also need to generate people, food, and materials. So it's very much a simplified version of something like a Civilization or any other kind of city management sim, where you often are getting, wood and stone and all these different resources. This is very, very streamlined, very simplified, breaks it down into much fewer things to keep track of. But you are, chopping down trees. You don't have individual people at any point. You just have the abstraction of people, and you can spend people, which is basically just a number that goes up or down. You never see little humans. It's not like, you're not controlling units in any sense, but you spend people, you spend food, you spend materials to do certain things, build buildings on those lands, turn them into farmland, cut down trees, hunt on things. And the way you accomplish many of these activities, like fishing or hunting or chopping down trees, is that the little square tile becomes a little mini game, a little like throwback almost to the beginnings of arcade, Atari 2600 style mini game, where you're just like, doing missile command or something like that, where you're literally just like to chop down trees, for example. It'll show the trees, and then it'll have a little axe that like goes from left to right and right to left really fast, and you click a button and you get to stop. And if you stop in the right zone, you get more trees for cutting down the trees. Or, you'll to hunt, it has a little bow and arrow at the bottom of this little tile in the sea of other tiles. But the little tile has a little bow and arrow that you can move left and right. And then it'll have like little, simplistic looking deer going back and forth. And you got to like move your arrow and try to shoot them. Just little arcadey mini games to do. It's so charming. But the game is really sophisticated in that you create this interconnected city. So, the relationship of tiles to each other is important. So if you have a have farmland, and then you could build a farm next to it, so that'll give you a bonus for any of the adjacent tiles that are farmland. Will get you extra farm, extra food. So you can you want to plan things out in that way, but also there are events that happen, things go wrong, you little story moments that are happening in your city. You can't build on this tile. You can only build certain things on this tile because of the terrain type. You're making lots of really lovely decisions and expanding and growing the light. And then in story mode, there's this whole fiction about, you know, the light versus darkness, and there'll be these dark storms that appear that you have to weather that will destroy some of your buildings if you can't, if you don't have enough light resource built up to you know, mitigate that. It is such a charming game with so many little clever ideas. It's, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the cozy designator that we has come into
You want to
fashion.
Be uncomfortable. Yeah.
No, no, no. It's not that I'm not a fan of those games. I like those games. I just don't, for whatever reason, I think that the idea of it's a cozy game. I'm not a fan of that, of calling games cozy. But I think this would probably fit, even though you are dealing with some negative things that can happen. Most of the time, it's just very pleasurable and pleasant to be dealing with this. And, you know, it gives you really cool feedback of the interconnectedness of all the different tiles, and you click on something and you see how it feeds in and what bonuses you're getting from the adjacent tiles. And it's got so much personality to it. It looks really lovely, I think. Very clear, very clean. It's got a, you know, a pixel art aesthetic to it. But I was so charmed by this game. It's called Dawn Folk. And you know, it's like $15 on Steam. There's a demo if you want to try it out. Great game for Steam Deck. And it gives you, you know, obviously it's not a 4X game, right? You're not building armies. You're not, there's a lot of stuff in Civ you're not doing. But right. It's like this kind of slim down, streamlined, you know, kind of concentrated little jolt of some of the things that I love about building my little diorama world and making everything just so, and getting this machine, this engine of productivity to work together. It scratches all those itches. And then it has all these lovely little quirks to it that are so fun that pop up and you're like, oh, that I didn't anticipate that happening. And you know, you get like science points that you can spend to transform buildings into more sophisticated versions of them. So it's like, it's surprisingly deep as well. I think the world of this game. I'm very impressed with Dawn Folk.
So how long is like a round or a match?
Yeah, what's the cycle? Yeah.
Well, so there's lots of different modes. So there's like a story mode that will, you progress over time, and you're actually, you earn this other currency by doing certain things in the game that let you unlock other game modes and other things inside game modes. So there's sort of like a meta progression as well beyond, you know, inside the game itself. Like the menus, you can unlock things in the menus that let you do things with this other currency. So there's a story mode that has certain things that, you know, certain campaign levels that you can progress through. But there's also like a daily challenge map and there's other modes that just like drop you into a fully developed city and you have to do X, Y, or Z things just to, you know, to pass that level. So there's like puzzle mode and challenge mode, and there's a daily challenge. Lots of stuff to do. It's great. but I guess, I don't know if I answered your question exactly, but it's different for each of those modes is basically what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
So you have certain goals that you need to hit. And once you hit those goals, it'll be like, okay, we're giving you X number of this meta currency. Now you can unlock the next step of the campaign, or you can unlock another puzzle mode or whatever you want to spend that currency.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool, man. Like just kind of hearing you talk about it. Actually, you know what? Aesthetically, it kind of looks like to me in the idea of putting down tiles is Loop Hero. Remember,
yeah,
Loop Hero, you put the tiles down and it would kind of change your little guy going around the circle.
Yeah, I think
aesthetically it looks like
a
that.
The art is a little more detailed than Loop Hero. Loop Hero was very simplistic looking, and this is right. Simplistic, but I think, you know, it's more colorful than Loop Hero, and it's got, you know, I think there's more detail to the tiles. But yeah, I definitely see that why you might say that.
Yeah. And those little mini games, man, that sounds,
it's
that sounds
so
like a lot
charming.
Of
fun. It's so great. It's like, I want to do that. And then you can like unlock certain, you can unlock certain buildings that make it so that you always are successful on the mini games. So you don't even have to play the mini games anymore. And I was like, I don't even want to do that because I like the mini games.
You want to play the, I mean, you remember like as a kid, did you guys play Oregon Trail?
Oh,
like
sure.
Like when you would go to school, like yeah. A little hunting game. Like but yes. As you were describing that, that's what I was thinking of. It's like,
totally.
Of course I want to do the hunting game.
Totally.
Like that's,
yeah.
But that's
then it'll have these little moments where it's like,
you know, somebody fell in the mine. What do you want to do? And it's like you can spend resources to save them or like shut down the mine. You know, so it's giving you little choices and little narrative bits as well. It's just it's very charming game, and I think cool. very highly of it. It's only $15. I hope a lot of people check it out and check out the demo too.
I was gonna say there's a demo. Yeah, I definitely want to check that out.
Yeah, it's a good one. Dawn Folk is what it's called. All right, well. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those, folks. But Mark Turcotte, thank you so much for being with us. It's been so much fun chatting with you.
Yeah, guys, I really appreciate it. Like I said, kind of getting that message from you kind of threw me back a little bit, man, because I have actually been a listener for a while.
Awesome.
So I was one of your geeks and sneaks, man. I'm a runner, so a lot of times you guys have powered me through my runs, like you see at the top of the show. So
that's awesome.
But yeah, so I do appreciate the invite, man, for sure.
Oh, it's our pleasure and glad to have you. It warms my heart to hear that. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff you're doing online.
Well, yeah. So, of course, I am the host of Rivals Assemble. We are a Marvel Rivals podcast. We come out every Friday, so you can find us on all the podcast platforms. We do also just record the show live, so it is up on YouTube and Twitch, but, of course, the audio really is our focus. You can find me personally on Twitter or on Blue Sky at Mark Turk, MarkTurc. And of course, you can find Rivals Assemble there too at Rivals Assemble. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I mean, a lot more Avowed, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. I hear that.
The game's so fun. I love the combinations of, as Mark mentioned, you can do anything. Like the combat is great. I am working on a newsletter. I write a newsletter, conversational newsletter that folks can subscribe to for free over on Substack, which is just substack.christianspicer.com, whichever way they do it. It's there. You can find it. And what I'm writing right now is as I'm playing through Avowed via Game Pass, I feel like Game Pass has never, this year especially, has never been better and at the same time more of a mess than it is right now in 2025. So that is the thesis. That is a jumping off point for the newsletter I'm working on. Hopefully it comes out this week. My goal is to have it out by Friday, but life comes at you fast. But you can subscribe to that for free. You can find it on Substack. And this show and myself, we are on Blue Sky as well. This show is DLC Hype Train, and you can find me there as Christian Spicer. Jeff, what about you, my friend?
Well, I'm also on the Blue Sky there as Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. Love hearing from folks there, as well as at our email, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can listen to me talk about movies and TV shows on a show called The Filmcast. We're talking about The Monkey this week. Should be a fun discussion. I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. Good, fun other shows for you to check out. Hope you do. But let's wrap this show up with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Mark, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do, actually. So this show I know has been pretty overly advertised on a lot of TV channels and even on YouTube. I've seen trailers for the show. But my wife and I are really enjoying Paradise. So this is a show. It's on Hulu. I think you can even catch it on Disney Plus. I even think they ran the pilot on ABC. Have you guys watched this at all?
I watched the first episode.
Okay. So you probably didn't like it. Well,
yeah,
we're enjoying it for what it is. But they did just renew it for a second season. There's two episodes left, I think. And kind of the mystery. I don't want to spoil what is going on, because if you watch the trailers and the commercials and that, all you know is that Sterling K. Brown plays a secret agent. And James Marsden is the president. He gets assassinated. And then the mystery ensues after that. But there is a bigger thing going on above that. And kind of the way the show doles out its story is, and this could be good or bad for some folks, but kind of in the Lost way, if you want to say, how they go back. So even though James Marsden, of course, gets assassinated in the first episode, he's in there throughout much of the series. As we have these flashbacks, you kind of learn what is going on as the mystery kind of pulls through. But it's pretty good. I enjoy, I mean, Sterling K. Brown is just a great actor. He's perfect for that role. And so, yeah, we've been enjoying it. So you can catch that. It's on Hulu or, like I said, on Disney Plus. I think you can get it there too.
We've been talking about this show a fair amount on the bonus, the paid DLC show, our Wednesday show, because Lana loves this show.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm with her.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's paradise. Check it out.
It's good.
All right. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Also a love it or hate it show for a lot of folks, I think. Reacher season 3 has started on Prime Video. I think I plugged Reacher even last time I was a guest on the film cast. I love Reacher. I probably plugged it as a parting gift on this show as well. It's, you know, big hulking dude, lives off the grid, stumbles into a new town. It's like, what, what if Poker Face, but big hulking dude who beats his way out of problems instead of solving them creatively. I mean, it's just Alan Rickman. Rickman? No. Alan Richards?
It's not Poker Face so much as Poke Her Face.
Yeah. Alan Rickman is he's no longer with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to get his name right because I think
Snape.
Reacher, Cat, Alan. Alan Richson. Alan Richson. He's a hulking man in real life, unlike the Tom Cruise version of the movie Reacher, where Tom Cruise is not a hulking man. And the thing I love about it, I mean, it's just, one, it's fun and beat 'em up action, and he always is right, you know, in some weird way. But two, like, the premise for this character is he's a vagabond. He lives off the grid. He doesn't want any attachments to anything. And he stumbles into a town, and then bad stuff starts happening. He's always like, well, trouble has a way of finding me. And it's never like, dude, reevaluate your life. Yeah. You know, like,
go, stop going places.
Just settle down, maybe, you know. But it is the journeyman style show where each season is like, oh, what small town did he hop off the train on this time? You know, like, what's corruption in this little town? And season 3 so far has been an absolute hoot. And Weird Science, the star of Weird Science, the old Brat Pack.
Oh, Anthony
Michael Hall.
Michael Hall, yeah.
Plays, I'm assuming, a villain. We'll find out soon enough. And it's just great to see him as like this old businessman dude in it. So Reacher season 3, it's a treat. It is as dumb and as fun as you want it to be, and I'm loving it.
My parting gift is a little bit weird, because usually parting gifts are, a big hearty endorsement, and this is a more tempered endorsement, but I went out of town, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this weekend with my family. Went up to the mountains with several other families, went to this Airbnb, and the Airbnb we stayed at, this cabin, had something I had not experienced before, not seen before. Maybe either of you have heard of it, but evidently Arcade 1-Up has this thing called an infinity table.
Mm-hmm.
You guys heard of these things?
I have, yeah.
It's a big iPad, basically, but in the table form. And it's got a bunch of games on it. And I guess you could buy more, but it comes with like 30 games. And they're not great. They're not great games. The idea being that it's trying to facilitate family fun. So it's got a lot of stuff like, you know, it's got Monopoly on it and, you know, Scrabble and a lot of, you know, classic tabletop game experiences, like old school game experiences. And so you can sit around, it's a touchscreen, and you can you can play all these, play Yahtzee and all kinds of stuff on it. And there was a bunch of kids. We had a whole gaggle of kids at the cabin, and they just congregated to this thing. And they play. I want to tell you guys about the game that ruled them all. They played a fair amount of Yahtzee and other things, but there was a game on this thing called Dizzy Tanks. And after the kids went to bed, I'm going to tell you, the parents played a few rounds of Dizzy Tanks as well. So Dizzy Tanks is a completely top-down, like full top-down. If anybody is old enough to have played Combat on the Atari 2600, you know, Combat is a tank. Everybody's a tank. Try to shoot each other and be the last tank standing. That's Dizzy Tanks. The dizzy part comes in the fact that there is one button. Everybody, so you have four corners of this table that somebody can sit at, and everybody's got one colored button. And the button
shoots, moves, and rotates. So what happens is you're a dizzy tank. You're spinning around, and when you shoot, it changes the direction you're spinning. So, and if you hold it down, it'll shoot you in the direction that it was pointing, or it'll move you in the direction it was pointing when you push the button. So you're constantly a spinning dizzy tank, but what direction, the direction changes every time you push the button. So you're trying to it makes moving around the space a challenge, and you're all four doing it at the same time, trying to shoot each other before you get shot. It's good, wacky fun. I got to tell you, I mean, it is no better than any terrible mobile game, but just the fact that you're playing it on a large table size surface. So I came here thinking I'm going to recommend this. This is really cool that this Airbnb had this. I did a little Googling, a little Googlies.
It's expensive.
$1,000 this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
I'm surprised that your kids play on it. You got to move them away from the fine china.
Holy macaroni. I did not expect it to be $1,000. And you only get 30 games. And there's 100 games that you can get. Each one of the, they have the gall to charge you on top of that.
Yeah.
I was very surprised that this thing. But hey, if you can find yourself an Airbnb with one, it's a good distraction. The free games are, it's got Clue and Monopoly and Battleship and Backgammon and Checkers and Chess and Life and Othello and Simon and Scrabble, but it's got them dizzy tanks, guys.
How sensitive was the screen? Because that's one thing I've always wondered about that. If you're playing, let's say, Monopoly, moving the piece, was it?
Did you have to
touch it a few times, actually move the piece or
I was
the
reading
checker
that
or whatever?
These things can be laggy. I didn't spend enough time on it. I will tell you, the 6 and 8 year olds had no complaints. I will put it that way. but playing Dizzy Tanks, I saw zero lag. But again, I'm just tapping one. I wasn't dragging anything.
Yeah, you're not dragging anything around.
Yeah, not doing anything complex. But yeah,
wow.
I can't vouch. That's why it's weird to put it as a parting gift, because I can't vouch for this thing as being worth $1,000 to you. But I wanted to talk about it, and I didn't really think of any other place to put this. And I think it's a kind of a wacky, fun thing that we had a good time with. Dizzy Tanks. Good times.
Cool.
All right. We had a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Jay. Jay says, I have a musical parting gift for you. My buddy Mark Laidlaw just released an album, After the Pulse. He describes it as an indie, psychedelic folk rock album with some alt twang. 10 songs composed, written, and sung by Mark, and available everywhere you listen. I loved it, and I'm not just saying that because we're friends. It's amazing when a guy you hang out with, just chatting, making jokes, playing games, decides to try something new during COVID, and it turns out he's an excellent musician. Very inspirational, especially for those of us of a certain age. Old. Oh, fun fact, Mark Laidlaw wrote the Half-Life game. Too bad he never accomplished anything before this album. Jay. Hey, cool, Jay. Cool. After the Pulse, again, is the name of the psychedelic folk rock with alt twang by Mark Laidlaw. Very cool.
That if you play backwards, you get the plot for Half-Life 3.
Yeah, so it's in there. It's all in there. Just keep listening. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Mark Turcotte and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get merch for our show by heading to our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. We'll see you next week. Oh, no. Hey, we got to thank our patrons. Our patrons are the reason this show gets made. Thank you, patrons. Big, big thank you to the patrons. Become a patron. Support the show. That is patreon.com/dlcpod. All right. Now we'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.